Right.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening and wherever you're listening. My name is Tanura, and welcome back to another episode of the Students Era Podcast. Now, in the past couple of episodes, we've touched upon a lot of different varieties with the different minds and skill sets provided to us by the UAE's finest university students. Today, we're going to take a little bit of a reverse track into one of the more important and lesser spoken about topics, in my opinion, when it comes to being a university student, sustainability and our environment. And for that, I'm joined by our AUS student, Samira Khan. Samira, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, Tanura. Hi, everyone. My name is Samira Khan, and as Tanura gave me a great introduction, I am actually a student at AUS getting a Bachelor's of Science degree in Environmental Science, and I'm so excited to be here today.
All right, Samira, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for also finding the time. So,
of course.
I think I'll just head straight into it. But before I head straight into it, I have one major question.
Tell me.
To what degree did David Attenborough inspire you to pursue this as a career?
David Attenborough.
Yes, the world's most famous speaker on protecting the earth.
Ooh, I'm more of a Greta Thunberg girl. Don't know much about David Attenborough.
No, you're joking.
I'm not. I know a lot about Greta Thunberg, but not a lot about David Attenborough. I would love for you to tell me more.
Okay. I think I'll do that after this episode is done because,
sure.
Not gonna lie, if anybody listening does, like to focus a lot on the environment, on Earth and sustainability, the number one name is David Attenborough. So if anyone here wants to go after Samira for not knowing him, feel free. He was knighted by the Queen, by the way, so that's kind of like an added kick to the head.
It's totally fine. It's okay. That's why I'm a student and not an expert in this field yet. I'm still learning.
Good answer. That's a good answer. Anyways.
It's the truth.
Fair point. All right. Let's head straight into it. So obviously studying, well, in a summarized version, you're studying a lot about the environment. So in your opinion, or for you first, what made you want to actually focus or study this field of academia?
Okay, well, that's a great question. The thing is that my sister actually was working in the Ministry of Agriculture in Canada, and she talked a lot about how, climate change was affecting agriculture across the world. And then she talked a lot about a concept called climate change, which was very different to global warming. And bear in mind, this was almost about 8 to 9 years ago. So this was like a very long time ago. So back then, my sister brought up this new concept that was very like novice to me. I didn't know much about it. And hearing about it through her and then her actually getting to that job field and then telling us what she does really sparked my interest. So when it came time for me to graduate from high school and look into what I wanted to pursue as a career, international relations was something I considered. But then when I read like the course description, particularly in the AUS catalog for environmental science, I absolutely loved it. And I was like, I really do think this is something I want to do. Plus, what I ended up doing for the international relations bit is I ended up minoring in environmental policy. So I kind of got the best of both worlds. And I feel like every single time I take a course that's related to my major, I absolutely love it. I love the content that we study about. I love studying about the chemical, physical, biological side of things. And yeah, I just love this degree.
Fair enough. I wish I could say the same for my degree, but, some of us have to struggle. No, I'm kidding. But
it'll
no.
Get better.
Okay, I do hope so. But knowing,
we'll do that.
I mean, we'll find out as the years go on, entering final year.
Ooh, good luck.
Thanks. But no, so obviously knowing, it is Bachelor's of Science, like, it is a science-based degree, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yeah.
So obviously being a science degree, especially, there's that added, added struggle, added definition of it having to be, very accurate and very precise in work. It's not, it can be something, anything related to science in itself requires heavy levels of precision. And in my personal opinion, from what I've seen, many people don't really see or understand the true accuracy or the true detail that you have to go through to understand many of environment's biggest disasters or questions, whether it's something like climate change, for example. So what do you feel are your thoughts towards the degree of accuracy or the lack of accuracy taken by the general public towards a serious situation like climate change?
Okay. Well, the funny part is that usually when I tell someone that I'm doing an environmental science degree, I don't know why the concept is always like, oh, you're a tree hugger. That means you you're someone who loves hugging trees, or like you're someone who like literally cares so
I feel
much
like
about the
this is a
environment.
shortcut on me, but fair enough.
Yeah, it is, but you aren't the first person to say that to me.
Fair
So
enough.
the thing is, yeah, I have to be honest, obviously I'm not an expert in this degree. Clearly, I didn't even know who David Attenborough was, so I'm no expert. But being honest, the thing that I feel like that people miss out on the most is understanding that the environment is like it's kind of affecting everyone, regardless of whether you're interested in the field of environmental science or not, because you could be a business student and now climate finance is becoming such a major thing. So you could be like a business student like you, Thanura, and eventually the climate will affect the economy to such a point that, even businesses will have to shut down, or like business side of things gets hurt. So I feel like, or even like when it comes to hospitality, like hotel management and everything, tourism goes down because countries are getting warmer, people want to go to cooler countries, etc. Like, I'm just trying to explain that it kind of affects everyone. It's not just that like environmental scientists are the only ones who should be interested in what we're doing. I feel like everyone should be. And I feel like environmental modeling, which is a concept that's very new and not talked about much, is something that everyone needs to kind of have a good understanding or grasp of. It's basically those models you see on TV or online where they show that, like, oh, this is what the Earth used to look like. Now this is what it looks like. And now this is what we predict for the future. It's like modeling what the climate will look like. So I feel like obviously we cannot get 100% accurate answer of like what things are going to be like in the future for the climate, but based on like our understanding and based on like measurements, very, very, very close to 100% accurate measurements, like done with like instruments for
You
over
can't
many
really get
years.
anything that precise at all in this world.
Yes,
I'm gonna be very honest.
exactly.
I don't think you can get anything precise now in the world that we live in. There are too many
Yeah, I
factors
mean,
to influence everything.
yeah, that's true. But there are things like, for example, there's a place in Hawaii and there's a Mauna Loa Observatory. We studied about this extensively in our climate change course, where we talked about where there's like a setup of this apparatus that they've been measuring CO2 levels since like the
Really?
19 like yeah late 1900s. Like they've been doing that since the late 1900s. To this day, that observatory still measures CO2 levels, and it's a pretty accurate measurement of CO2 levels, which has helped us understand that CO2 levels have increased, So this
I'm
is just
very
like an
scared to now
example.
go on the internet to search that up, It's
We
scary.
had to, like for a class, we literally had to search up the levels, and then we had to literally know them for like an exam, for example. And it was
Whoa.
very interesting to see that, like, back in like the 1990s, around the early 2000s, like a lot of these climate activists used to say that a level of like above like 300 ppm, which is parts per million, or like 250 ppm, will be too dangerous for humans to live in.
I
And
wonder
today
what it
we're
is
living
now.
at, it's around 400 something, like
Oh, change
400.
your mind.
Yeah.
Oh,
No, but the jump, like at that time we were at something like 100 and something, and at that time the climate activists were getting worried because they were like, if we hit like 250 to 300 ppm, it's going to be really, really dangerous. And now we're at 400 plus ppm, so it's like it's scary, right? So that means
yeah,
that like the damage
exactly.
is starting to happen. Yeah. And I feel like a really major part of something people don't talk about is how the climate is affecting public health. That's a very major topic that's
Oh
coming up in
yeah.
COP28. Yeah, in COP28, there's a very big part of it that they're going to talk about public health effects, because if you notice, recently people have started getting sick, sometimes for no reason, without explanation. And those
It's
like
like heat
cases are
stroke
starting to
going around,
increase.
right?
Yeah, exactly. And like a lot of like glaciers melting is actually exposing diseases that were frozen from like thousands of years. So that's another concept that like public health is also declining, because of that. So that's what I just mean to say, that like it's a concept that affects everyone. And that's why it's good for everyone to have knowledge about it. And that's why being an environmental scientist like myself, a future one, hopefully, my thought process is, sorry.
You'll definitely become an environmental scientist. I have faith.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I still have a lot of learning to do, but that's the path I hope to take. And I've learned a lot through my degree at AUS. Like, I'm very grateful to AUS and the professors because they teach us a lot, and I'm very grateful for the courses they let us take, especially our BCE, which is the Biology, Chemistry, Environmental Science department. It's absolutely amazing. Like, shout out to them because they're doing a great job. But it's one of the reasons I've realized that, like, everyone needs to know about environmental science, and it's not just being a tree hugger. Like, that's just my little brief about it.
Fair. And I do apologize for calling you a tree hugger from the
You better be sorry. I'm kidding. It's
get-go.
totally fine.
Yeah, thanks. I think. But staying on the topic of, people needing to be worried. Like, I
Yeah.
like the part where you brought up, the different businesses, the different markets, especially that are affected by
Yeah.
the climate crisis, because we can see that happening, around the world as well. You've got, cornfields in the east burning from massive heat waves, and then you have countries
Yeah.
suffering from droughts down in the south.
Yep.
And sorry about that. And my personal favorite, which has been probably the biggest environmental issue that's been going on, in my opinion, for decades at this point, wildfires in multiple forests,
Oh,
especially in
yeah.
countries like the US, in the
Oh,
Amazon
yeah.
Hill. So,
Those are just so unfortunate.
it's just going, it's reaching a very bad extent. And I'll be frank, saying on this, which is very, I think it's very brave on my end. I do believe that I could be doing a lot more to contribute to sustainability, having better sustainable practices. But when other people that study different degrees, or even people in other business professions, in the modern world, for anything, whether it's something about climate change, whether it's something about, improving equal pay, for example, let's take, there's always a major question of monetary promises, financial promises that always need to be committed. Now, in the past, I like to think that in the past, that wouldn't have been as big of a deal. But now, you've got innovation happening everywhere, where the question
That's
comes
true.
down to, yeah, exactly. Like, the question comes down to which one deserves the more importance. Like, obviously, you have these companies that they try to equal the innovation everywhere, but then they are lacking behind. But sometimes a company focuses on one place and then it completely destroys another part of the entire system. So, in your opinion, understanding, like where the world, understand to a strong degree where everything is going with the earth, sustainability, the climate, and especially the need to focus on innovation. Do you think businesses right now, let's just take general businesses, not organizations, companies, profit companies, they are putting a strong, or they're giving focus to sustainability. Do you think that they're giving enough focus to sustainability, or do you think it is 70% talk and 30% implementation?
Personally, talking about the UAE, I've seen a lot of improvement because of the fact that since UAE has been declared the year of sustainability for 2023, and since COP28 has actually been, is going to be held in Expo in December, November and to December,
And
I
I'm
feel like there
expecting to be
has been,
attending.
huh?
I expect you're going to be attending, yeah.
I hope so. Yes, I would absolutely love to be there. It's literally like a career dream of mine. Like, so much to learn there. There's so many people to learn from. Like, that's what I'm super excited about, and I really hope I get a chance to be there. But the main thing is that because of COP28 coming up, UAE has really taken a stance in spreading knowledge about sustainability related things and sustainability related initiatives and innovation, particularly competitions and bringing the youth into play. So I feel like the best thing that UAE has done is really take advantage of their youth, because we as youth, as environmental science students, we're like looking at now these like new competitions and these new job positions that are opening up for sustainability managers, sustainability like operators, sustainability consultants, even like positions in the UN, like World Bank related positions, etc. I feel like that as COP gets a more bigger deal and as COP spreads around to different countries across the world, it really brings that country's attention towards the issues, especially related to sustainability, for example, and other aspects of life. And that really helps, spread awareness and help businesses and like companies actually realize what the importance is. So, for example, ADNOC, we know it's like a oil company, that literally make petrol, like one of the fossil
Exactly.
fuels.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
however, the ADNOC CEO, who is now the president of COP28, he literally is like changing all of that. He's like contradicting that mindset that like, oh, just because I own an oil company doesn't mean I cannot carry out this job of being the president of COP28 flawlessly, because he's doing a great job. He has actually been turning ADNOC into starting to use biofuels, which is going to be like, I'll just give you a vague example of what biofuel is. So
All right.
McDonald's, for example, already does that. McDonald's in UAE, if I'm not wrong, I think yes, 100% they do this. I could be wrong with the facts and figures, but I know that a
Big
lot
up
of McDonald's.
McDonald's. Let's go, guys.
Yeah, we love McDonald's because McDonald's actually uses the oil that they cook their French fries in or fry things in. It undergoes certain processing, and then that's the same oil that they use as fuel in their vehicles that they use to transport
Oh.
across UAE. Yeah,
So
that's biofuel.
they're basically literally reusing the oil. Damn.
Yeah, that's biofuel. That's basically like,
They're taking that motto
using
very
fuel.
seriously.
Yep, they really are. And
Ba, 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 ba.
I'm loving it for real. But so like them doing this with biofuels is a really good stance, because it shows you that a company or a really big franchise like McDonald's, they can take a stance for climate change, which means even small businesses that are starting out today or big businesses like other companies need to, do the same. And ADNOC, for example, yeah, so they're planning to switch to biofuels, and that would be a very major like change, and that would be really revolutionary in a sense, because it would really take away from a
Yeah.
lot of need like
You'd be
petroleum and oil.
converting one of the Middle East's like biggest providers of oil and petroleum to a
Yeah,
very strong
exactly.
extent. A company that's like
Yeah.
focused on giving fuel to cars to move to biofuels. Like that's nothing tiny. That's not something that anybody should like
That really
ignore.
is not. That's what I'm saying. I feel like, like the choice of taking the CEO of ADNOC as the president of COP28 was quite smart. I feel like he's not only doing a good job, because I try to follow through with like COP28 related news on their Instagram and LinkedIn, et cetera, on their social media. And like he's constantly visiting other countries and constantly like, communicating with their presidents and like, how they can all be green and how they can all include sustainability into their lifestyle. So I feel like, yeah, businesses are really starting to realize, as well as politicians. I feel like everyone is sort of starting to realize that it's us who can make the difference. And whether you're a business or whether you're like, just a firm business, small business, a franchise, anything,
Yeah.
sustainability can really help your business itself.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I didn't really, I'll be very frank. I didn't really know that, actually not even really, I didn't know that, the ADNOC CEO was the head of COP28, to be honest. I just thought it was like someone that worked like at the ministry or like a ministry for, agriculture, something that was the head of the COP28. Now that's actually very interesting to learn about.
Yeah, he either
Actually
the
great.
CEO of ADNOC or like some very high position in ADNOC, and basically he is, his name is His Excellency Dr. Sultan Al Jaber. If I'm saying that right, I think yeah, he is a doctor title, but he is basically the he has a pretty high position in ADNOC as well as the president for COP28, and he really is making a change for the best to prove that like, just because he comes from an oil company doesn't mean he cannot do COP28 the justice that he is doing.
Yeah, wow. I'm actually like, I'm sorry, but I'm a little bit stumped right now because I'm still in shock by that whole fact. I had this, I'll
No.
be very honest, I had a question set up, and then when I heard that the ADNOC CEO was the head of COP28, I was like,
Yep.
wait, what? Wait, I need to focus a bit more. I need to hear this in detail.
No, you
But
can go
wow.
ahead. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
But I one thing I did re hear re realize from like your entire speech is like it is actually involving ADNOC, petroleum company, but not less about petroleum companies, but more like one of the major things that they service to, the automobile industry.
Yeah,
Now,
exactly.
we can all agree that one of the biggest contributors to climate change, whether it's like or like greenhouse gases or anything toxic fume based, cars and automobiles or any form of transportation that requires a fossil fuel, it does play a very big role into that play. And obviously we can see that there are being many strides being made. There are companies trying to build electric cars. There are petroleum companies, like now you said, are trying to implement biofuels in their vehicles, which is, of course, it is quite the release of an emission, but compared to using a fossil fuel, there's a heavier benefit. So I want to ask you, and obviously, depending on your answer, you might, be praised by people, but you also might be angering a few people. So be ready. And
It's
knowing that
okay.
there's a lot of car enthusiasts, especially in the UAE, what do you think the stigma about, the argument needing to be made that cars need pure fuel? And when I say pure fuel, I refer to fossil fuel. So that means petroleum to work to have a sustainable or working world is a necessity. To what degree do you think that cars need to actually use fossil fuels, or when do you think is it time for us to finally transition from it, even if it's possible in the get-go?
Thinner, you really are putting me at a bad position here.
I told you, like, listen,
Yeah,
like,
you
when
really are.
I mean, you did you when you listen, you brought up car, you brought you just you indirectly brought up cars, you
No,
indirectly
it's
brought
totally
up
cool.
cars.
You know what? I'll go ahead and answer that
So to
question.
all the F1 fans
Honestly,
listening, just be ready for this answer.
no, yeah, and F1 looks amazing. F1 looks very interesting. And of course,
I
like
like how you're
everything aside,
all right.
yeah, I'm
Let's
like
hear
defending
this.
myself. I'm like, no hate to anyone. I'm just talking from like the
No
facts that I've learned.
disrespect.
Yeah, no disrespect to each their own. Of course, like I'm not gonna come to you and tell you to like change your car today and you don't have to listen to me. But in all honesty, I know that people prefer gas-based cars or like cars that run on like, fuel, because of, like especially car enthusiasts, as far as I know from like the people that I've seen, is because of the rev that it does or like, the feel that you get when you accelerate a car that is driven on fuel. And I know that people say that driving an electric car is not the same feel because you don't get that rev or, I've never driven an electric car, so I can't like 100% tell you what the differences
Oh,
are, but
wow.
like
Amazing.
yeah, I've like, I've never driven one. I mean, I would love to, but like, I've seen them around. And as far as like, I've heard the argument of both sides, I know that the main problem that everyone has is that with electric cars, like it won't rev the same or like, you don't get to like accelerate and feel that thrill, which I
Yeah.
understand. Obviously, it's like we don't like basically changing things or in a sense dehumanifying it because like, we like cars the way that they are. When they rev, they give you a thrill. They're an enjoyment for people. F1 exists on that. And so wanting
Totally.
to change from that into something that might be electric, which is like sort of taking away from a lot of people's passion and what really gives them the thrill. I understand that it can be a very like deceiving and like an upsetting thing. But honestly, the truth of the matter is that we're so far along in like in the negative when it comes to our climate that if it, even if it's something as small as having to change our cars from fuel-based to electric, it would help us immensely, like to save our lives, So I feel like the trade-off is, it's an unfair trade-off maybe, but it's something that's necessary just because of the circumstance we're in, which is, could be something as a result of generations of like fossil fuel use. And it couldn't necessarily be our fault, but I feel like to save ourselves and our future generation, it would be the right move,
And you would, I would, I'd like to think of it like, obviously, like you said, it would be an unfair sacrifice, of course, it would
Yeah, of
definitely be an
course.
unfair sacrifice, but
But
honestly,
like for example, like Rolls-Royce, which is everyone loves Rolls-Royce. Like everyone knows it's such a luxury car. Like, Rolls-Royce is so luxurious. They're coming out with an electric version, their first ever electric version. So, like in a sense, you still get to enjoy the name brands that you love. And I'm pretty sure all these companies know what makes them what they are and what gives them the name that they have. And so I'm sure that they won't take away much from the car except for making it electric.
I mean, yeah, that's true. Like, because of course, sometimes, I mean, obviously, in my opinion, like, there are going to be certain times where you need to make a sacrifice. It's not going to be a sacrifice that you're going to be okay with all respect. Like, you know, it's not like everybody gets, you know, when everybody's dealt the cards they're dealt, it's not like they're going to like that pack or that deck at all. You just have to use it for the time being, and then when you get a new deck, it might be even better. You know, it's that time. It's like that short sacrifice, or in this case, this prolonged sacrifice for a better future. But it's not like, you're trying to promote stopping them. It's more like, you know, be more
That's
cautious
why
in how
hybrids
you use those
exist.
cards. That's why.
Hybrids exist. Like, that's
Oh
why
yeah,
hybrid
hybrids, of
cards are
course.
also like a big thing.
Exactly. Yeah, fair point. But yeah, hybrid cards, I think, like, is I think the best way, like, if anybody here wants to like learn to be able to get used to electric cars, just try and drive a hybrid. That's like the best way possible.
I think like a hybrid car is the best way to transition, or even like, do your part for the environment without like giving up all of like what you enjoy, basically.
Fair enough. That's fair. I mean, to all the F1 people listening, you know, you can just find Samir Khan's account details on our Instagram page. And I'm kidding. Let's not go that far. Let's not go that far.
Wait a minute,
Kidding, I'm kidding. But no,
wasn't
it's fine.
told to me.
But well, I'm kidding. Don't worry, guys. But no, like, it is a given fact. Like, you know, with how everything is going, with how the world's been treated, especially with our record consumption of fossil fuels. The Earth's climate condition is depleting. I wouldn't even say it on the daily basis of this, but I'd say more at the hourly basis. Like, you've got things, and it's not even just, and actually this is something else I wanted to ask you. It's not just based on, you know, the different methods of how we contribute through the consumption of the different things that the Earth provides us to, but it's also our overconsumption of it. Because, you know, it's nowadays, right? We don't anymore consume things from, like, you know, a standardized set point. You know, people have
Of
started
course, yeah.
growing desires, growing, you know, these wants. And wants obviously contribute to, you know, businesses obviously see that as a major profit margin. And when you see profit, you know, it kind of tempts a business to, you know, continue providing to it, which of course leads to overconsumption. I will definitely say that I am a provider to overconsumption, especially on the basis of things like comic books and, you know, printed sneakers and stuff. So something I wanted to ask you is, how do you think, or do you believe even, that overconsumption may be an even bigger killer or bigger contributor to the climate crisis currently?
That's a very interesting question that you ask, and it all goes down to the fact that our population is increasing much faster than it was ever anticipated to increase. We are currently at the 8 billion plus mark, which we thought that by 2100 we would be at the 10 billion mark. But if we're already at the 8 billion by 2023, that means that we're going to hit 10 billion quite sooner than what we anticipated. So I
Yeah,
feel like the
exactly.
whole overconsumption debate is coming because of the fact that the population is increasing. Like, the population boom is happening really, really quickly. Like it's basically going really high. And from like anyone who's interested in ecology or knows anything about ecology might know what the concept of a carrying capacity is. It's basically the carrying capacity is the level of, or like the amount of resources that the environment can provide to the species that lives in it. So like the earth, how many resources it can provide to us humans that live in it, right? So
Okay.
the point is, tell me.
No, I'm saying that, okay, like, I'm like trying to follow,
Oh,
I'm
okay.
following on this. No, I'm not trying to
Okay.
interrupt you. Sorry about that.
No, don't be sorry. So basically, like, as our population keeps increasing, and with the carrying capacity curve, it basically looks like that at the start, population keeps increasing because you have enough resources and the population is below the carrying capacity. Once you hit the carrying capacity, population will suddenly take a dip, like very harsh dip, in which the population will crash basically and become lower. So now the concern is, what is the Earth's carrying capacity? When does that point come, when we touch the maximum of our resources, and then we come to a point where we literally like don't have any choice, but no more resources left, right? Like no more
Yeah.
chance to overconsume, because even for consuming it might get hard. So that's like a debate that like now is like sort of, scary in a sense that it's like, what to do like about this. So
That's
that's
great.
why overconsumption is negative. That's why overconsumption is a killer too. I wouldn't say it's bigger because I feel like everything equally is having a negative effect, whether you take one or the other. But overconsumption is having effect because of this very reason that we don't know what the Earth's carrying capacity is. And therefore, we don't know what's going to happen if we reach it and then what is going to happen next. Like, will the Earth just lose all of its people, or like resources are done now? What happens? Like, we don't know. So that's the scary part.
Well, I didn't really, that's really like something a lot scarier, especially for like, people that are vested into things, like whether you're a type of person that likes to collect, if you're like a collector of goods, if you like to, wear the latest trends, that's something that I don't think many people would consider 90% of the time. But yeah, that's
Yeah,
still just,
exactly.
that's made it a lot more scarier for me if I ever go out to try and buy like a pair of sneakers. Like, oh, come on,
No, I
man.
mean,
Like, come on.
obviously, like, I think it's a joint effort, which is why we all say that, like, everyone needs to come together. Of course, yeah, overconsumption is a killer, definitely, for sure. I agree with that. It comes down to, like, basically, what we anticipate is that within the coming years, we're going to run out of a lot of resources that we use for, like, basic daily things. Like, for example, a very weird one, and one that you probably didn't think of, is the fact that we're actually going to run out of this one metal. Like, I don't remember the exact name, but there's this one particular metal. Its ores are going to run out, and that metal is needed to make touch screens on phones.
Oh,
So,
I think it's, oh, n not, oh no, that's a different one. I was thinking silver for a second because silver is used in almost every single piece of electrical conductor in known to mankind. But if you're talking about screens, I'm not really
don't
sure
think
what
it's
that is.
silver. It's some other metal, and its ores are running out. And once its ores run out, like basically to make anything into touchscreen, like an iPhone, an iPad, or like Samsung, any of these like touchscreen phones or touchscreen laptops, they require that certain metal. And once that metal runs out, like how is touchscreen going to be possible anymore, So either we're
Oh.
gonna have to like recycle old phones that have the metal in them, or like that's why I guess like it's amazing for companies like Apple, for example, to have those like recycling programs. I think that is pretty smart,
Yeah, definitely. But wow, I didn't really, now that's even more scary. Now that's even more dedicated to me to make sure I take extra care of my phone. Thanks for that, Tamira.
Of course. But yeah, I feel like the only thing to do is to take action in your own life, make sure that like you know that you're trying to be at least a little bit more sustainable. It's the bystander effect, if you see one person not doing it, you don't want to do it. But if you break that sort of chain and if you like break that sort of chain and you are like, you know what, like I want to make a difference, and you actually start taking action, people around you
Yeah.
might take inspiration and we can help save this world.
Fair enough. I guess that is very true. But yeah, looking at the time, that is all the time we have. But before we
Oh.
close, I do have one final question for you.
Yes.
If you could instantly stop one thing from damaging the climate, any of the contributors to the climate crisis, if there's just one thing that you can stop contributing to the climate crisis, what would it be?
Fossil fuels. Like, it's very basic, but that's the truth.
You know what? I can't even argue that. I just can't even argue that. Anyways, so that's the end of this interview. Samira, I hope you enjoyed coming on the podcast.
I
Make sure
really did.
everyone. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say I really did, but now because of you, I'm gonna right after this interview go and Google who David Attenborough is because it's been itching my brain since the start of this interview. So
Go
yeah,
for it, go
thank
for it.
you for that.
Say
Thank you
that.
for that.
So for everyone else, make sure to leave a comment if you guys enjoy, if you guys want to say something to Samira. Make sure to check out her social media page as well at Students Era on our latest post. And with that being said, my name is Tenura, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Students Era podcast. Thank you, and have a great day, great afternoon, or great evening ahead.